Welcome back to the Hemingway List, the podcast where we do things the Hemingway. We're talking about part two, chapter 32. Part two, chapter 32 of Anna Karenina. Just wanted to give a quick update. One person has finished reading my novel and good feedback. The feedback is good. I also got a little bit of feedback from Techrific, who said, after hearing yesterday's podcast, he understood my anxiety about wanting feedback and has provided some feedback on the first few pages of the book. That's all he's read so far, but also good feedback. So I can rest a little easy, I suppose, knowing that so far at least some bits of the book are enjoyable. So that's good. That makes me feel good. Part 2, Chapter 32 of Anna Karenina. Varenka coming through with the unrequited love advice. And Varenka being a replacement baby. Thoughts. Varenka being a replacement baby. I Am Norwegian said apparently Tolstoy's aunt had the same thing happen to her. It seemed like a good arrangement, assuming the cook was okay with it. Does Varenka remind anyone else a little of Alyosha? I was also reminded of C.S. Lewis's definition of humility. Humility is not... Excuse me. Humility is not thinking less of yourself, it's thinking of yourself less. Okay. There you go, that's nice. Kitty noticed this, realizing that she would only have felt pride. Mango Mondo said, yep, I immediately thought of Alyosha, always humble and ready to help others. It will be interesting to see what effect she has on Kitty. Techrific agreed, I definitely got an Alyosha vibe, but without the joy. Well, neutral joy, if that makes sense. I didn't think of Alyosha, to be honest. It didn't cross my mind, but I can see some similarities. Both of them have good outlooks on life, good morals, by the looks of things. But I see a little bit more pluck so far in Varenka. I feel like she commands a little bit more respect than Alyosha might, maybe something like that. Alyosha always had the feel to me of like a rookie, like, you know, like a bit of naivety. Yeah. But it's a bit early to tell as well. We don't know that much about Varenka. Swim said, the mumma fishy said, I think this chapter shows how much more maturation Kitty needs to do. Varenka is an impressive young woman. I would agree with that. I hope we see more of Varenka. She's a good character. And that's it. That's all the conversation for today. Not a lot of comments. So let's do the thing we do. And move on to chapter 33. Chapter 33 goes like this. Kitty also became acquainted with Madame Stahl. And this acquaintanceship, together with Varenka's friendship, not only had a great influence on Kitty, but comforted her in her sorrow. What comforted her was that a perfectly new world was revealed to her, a world that had nothing in common with her past, an exalted, admirable world from the heights of which it was possible to regard that past calmly. It was revealed to her that besides that instinctive life she had lived hitherto, there was also a spiritual life. That life was revealed by religion, but a religion that had nothing in common with that which Kitty had known since her childhood, and which found expression in Mass and Vespers at the private chapel of the widow's almshouse, where one could meet one's friends, and in learning Slavonic texts by heart with the priest. This was a lofty mystical religion connected with a series of beautiful thoughts and feelings, which it was not only possible to believe because one was told to, but even to love. Kitty did not learn all this from words. Madame Stahl spoke with her as with a dear child who gives one pleasure by remaining one of one's own past, had only once mentioned that love and faith alone can bring relief in all human sorrows, and that no sorrows are too trivial for Christ's compassion. Then she immediately changed the subject. But in Madame Stahl's every movement, every word, every heavenly look, as Kitty called it, and especially in the whole story of her life, which Kitty learned from Varenka, she discovered that what was important and what she had not known before. But however lofty may have been Madame Stahl's character, however touching her story, and however elevated and tender her words, Kitty could not help noticing some perplexing traits in her. She noticed that Madame Stahl, when inquiring about Kitty's relatives, smiled contemptuously, which did not accord with Christian kindness. And once, when Kitty met a Roman Catholic priest at the house, she observed that Madame Stahl carefully hid her face behind the lampshade and smiled in a peculiar manner. Trifling as these things were, they disturbed Kitty, and she felt doubts about Madame Stahl. But Varenka, lonely, without relatives or friends, with her sad disillusionment, wishing for nothing and regretting nothing, personified that perfection of which Kitty only allowed herself to dream. In Varenka she saw that it was only necessary to forget oneself and to love others in order to be at peace, happy and lovely. And such a person Kitty wished to be, having now clearly understood what was most important. Kitty was not content merely to delight in it, but immediately with her whole soul devoted herself to this newly revealed life. She formed a plan for her future life, based on what Varenka told her about the work of Madame Stahl and others whom she named, like Madame Stahl's niece, Aline, of whom Varenka told her a great deal. Kitty determined, wherever she lived, to seek out the unfortunate, help them as much as she could, distribute gospels and read the gospel to the sick, to criminals, and to the dying. The idea of reading the gospels to criminals, as Aline did, charmed Kitty particularly. But all these were secret dreams which she did not speak of, either to her mother or to Varenka. However, while waiting for the time when she could put her plans into operation on a larger scale, Kitty, imitating Varenka, here at the watering place where there were so many sick and unhappy people, easily found opportunities to apply her new rules. At first, the princess only noticed that Kitty was strongly influenced by her enduement, which apparently means infatuation, as she called it, for Madame Stahl, and especially for Varenka. She noticed that Kitty not only imitated Varenka's activities, but involuntarily copied her manner of walking, speaking, and blinking her eyes. But afterwards, the princess also noticed that apart from this infatuation, a serious spiritual change was taking place in her daughter. She saw that in the evening, Kitty read the Gospels in French given her by Madame Stahl, which she had not done before, that she avoided her society acquaintances and made up to the invalids who were under Varenka's protection, and especially to the family of Petrov, a poor sick artist. Kitty evidently prided herself on fulfilling the duties of a sister of mercy in that family. This was all very well, and the princess had nothing against it, especially as Petrov's wife was quite a well-bred woman, and the German princess, having noticed Kitty's activities, praised her, calling her a ministering angel. It would have been quite right had it not been overdone, but the princess saw that her daughter was getting out of bounds and spoke to her about it. Il ne faut jamais rien être, she said to her one day. You should never overdo anything. But her daughter did not reply. She only felt in her soul that one could not speak of overdoing Christianity. How was it possible to exaggerate when following the teaching which bids us turn the other cheek when we are struck, and give our coat when our cloak is taken? But the princess disliked this excess, and disliked it all the more because she felt that Kitty did not wish to open her whole heart to her. And Kitty really did hide her new views and feelings from her mother. She kept them secret, not from want of respect and love, but just because her mother was her mother. She would have revealed them to anyone sooner than to her. It seems a long time since Anna Pavlovna was here, said the princess once, speaking of Mrs. Petrova. I invited her, and she did not seem pleased. I did not notice anything, Mama, said Kitty, flushing up. Is it long since you went to see them? We are all arranging to go for a drive up the mountains tomorrow, replied Kitty. Well, go if you like, said the princess, looking intently into her daughter's confused face and trying to guess the cause of her confusion. That same day, Varenka came to dinner and said that Anna Pavlovna had changed her mind about going to the mountains tomorrow. The princess noticed that Kitty blushed again. Kitty, have you not had some unpleasantness with the Petrovs? The princess asked, when they were again alone together. Why has she stopped sending the children here and coming herself? Kitty replied that nothing had passed between them and that she did not at all understand why Anna Pavlovna seemed dissatisfied with her. Kitty spoke the truth. She did not know why Anna Pavlovna had changed toward her, but she guessed it. She guessed it to be something that she could not tell her mother and did not even say to herself. It was one of those things which one knows and yet cannot say even to oneself, so dreadful and shameful would it be to make a mistake. Again and again she went over in her memory all the relations she had had with that family. She remembered the naive pleasure expressed in Anna Pavlovna's round, good-natured face whenever they met, remembered their secret consultations about the patient, and their plots to draw him away from his work which the doctor had forbidden, and to take him for walks, and the attachment to her felt by the youngest boy who called her My Kitty, and did not want to go to bed without her. How good it had all been! Then she recalled Petrov's thin, emaciated figure in his brown coat, with his long neck, his thin, curly hair, his inquiring blue eyes, which had at first seemed to her terrible, and his sickly efforts to appear vigorous and animated in her presence. She remembered her first efforts to conquer the repulsion she felt for him, as for the consumptives, and her efforts to find something to say to him. She remembered the timid look full of emotion with which he gazed at her, and the strange feeling of compassion and awkwardness, followed by a consciousness of her own benevolence, that she had experienced. How good it had all been! But all that had been at first. Now, for some days past, all had suddenly been spoiled. Anna Pavlovna now met Kitty with affected amiability and constantly watched her husband and her. Could his touching pleasure, when she drew near, be the cause of Anna Pavlovna's coldness? Yes, she remembered, there was something unnatural in Anna Pavlovna, quite unlike her usual kindness. When the day before yesterday, she said crossly, There, he has been waiting for you and would not drink his coffee without you, though he was growing dreadfully weak. Yes, and perhaps my giving him his plaid may also have been unpleasant to her. It was such a simple thing, but he took it so awkwardly and thanked me so much that I myself felt awkward. And then that portrait of me, which he did so well, and above all that look confused and tender, yes, yes, it is so. Kitty said to herself, quite horrified, and then, No, it is impossible, it must not be, he is so pathetic. All right, there we go, another chapter down. Have your say about this one over on the subreddit. Thank you very much for listening, and I will see you tomorrow.